Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, let's get down to business. An active lifestyle can cause hemorrhoids. That sucks. Lucky for you, they're south of the border. South of the border is a holistic approach to dealing with the affected area. Go to southoftheborder.com, use code AHOLE, A-H-O-L-E, get yourself 30% off. That's pretty rad. And this is not an area of your body you want to put bad ingredients in. Make sure you turn to South of the Border. Southoftheborder.com, code AHOLE. Let me tell you a little bit about BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing. It doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at BetOnline. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's BetOnline. Head to the website right now. Use your mobile device. Sign up. Get a 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that's Believe, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on, there's no need to hesitate. Bet online, where the game starts.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
Welcome, everyone, to the Mikey Likes You podcast. I'm the Mikey who likes. You are you who is liked. Again, very simple equation. It works out well. Thank you, first and foremost, to my man Giorgio, who makes this all happen and gives me this amazing studio to work with and nice cameras that actually make me look clear and not like an old VHS.
Nice haircut.
Thank you. Yeah, you know. I think maybe I've been hanging around with the military crew a little too much. You know, I had to go high and tight. It was more of what my wife and my daughter were like, God, you really love wearing hats. I go, no, I don't. I'm 45 years old. I have a beautiful head of hair. I hate wearing hats. It's just Texas makes it so impossible to, like, I'm not going to wake up every morning like Don Draper and comb my hair. So I need a haircut that I can just, like, get out the gate and rock and roll. Thank you to First Detachment. Thank you to South of the Border. Thank you to BetOnline. And today, very happy to welcome a guest. He is a comic. He is a media personality. He is one of the more interesting people that I happen to know, and I mean that. And especially in the entertainment industry, you get a lot of people who will sacrifice the idea of being interesting, genuinely interesting, for the ability to fit into certain classifications, which has never been more important. In entertainment, and probably in culture in general, is like having this very narrow idea of identity and being able to classify people. But this young man does not want to do that, and I find that very, very admirable. I'm talking about Jamie Kilstein.
Hey. To be clear, I want to do it very much. My life would be much easier. I would be much more successful. And I just, every time I get the opportunity, I can't.
Well, you say you want to. But
I don't. But
you really don't, right?
No.
Because I think even in the something that I have a lot of familiarity with is being in the entertainment industry and trying to be funny. But that I am not a comic,
right?
And being a comic, getting on stage on purpose from town to town and trying to make people laugh, just standing there with a microphone, is a very unique thing, and it's very similar. I find it not a coincidence that a lot of comics are also into combat sports.
Yeah.
Because there's a similarity there where it's like, why would I ever sign up for this?
Right. Well, there wasn't for a while. I mean, I remember back in the day, Rogan would get me tickets to UFC events because he's like, none of my friends want to see this. Like, right. He was psyched that, like, I trained. And this is, I mean, we're talking like 15 years ago. And now it's so popular and the overlap is so heavy. And to me, it always made sense because when you think about how you get better at jiu-jitsu or how you get better at comedy, it is the same, which is you suck shit for a really long time.
Yeah.
And every bad show or every bad role, you go, should I quit? Why did I do this with my life? And then you show up the next day And there's just like that little fix that you do, whether it's a little fix, whether it's you escape the submission you kept getting caught with, or whether it's you fix a tag on a joke. And then that gives us crazy people like just enough dopamine to go, oh, do I love that? I mean, you literally oscillate. I feel like the beginning of jiu-jitsu or combat sports and the beginning of comedy, you're oscillating between this is the best thing in the world and, oh my God, I'm worthless. Why? And there is something about pursuing those paths that it's really hard, but it's worth it. Or it's just toxically addicting and we're all degenerates.
There's something to that. I also think like one of the biggest things I found, and I would imagine it would translate greatly to comedy, is that with grappling sports in particular, a lot of it is how you change your mindset to how you deal with failure.
Totally.
Like I went through a such a phase of like getting smashed out on the mats and like having the drive home be this huge sense of depression where I'm like, why am I doing this? This sucks. Yeah. I'm never going to be good. And like it was really miraculous. Like my skills might not have changed one bit, but changing to the, hey, this guy tapping me is part of the process. And dude, what can I learn from this?
I'm so glad you said that. I feel so. I'll teach at Tim Kennedy School sometimes, and a lot of times for the adults. And I always feel bad giving preachy speeches at that school because, like, every time they see it's me teaching, I feel like there's a bunch of really big dudes who really like Tim who are like,
probably have been to war.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, not guys who are online talking about what it means to be an alpha male. Like, you're there because that's my academy. That's where Jamie and I came back into contact. Because we'd always been in the same kind of universe. You
yeah.
know, with a lot of common friends.
I love that our mutual friends are like Dr. Drew and Tim Kennedy. Yes. Like, that's why we were destined to be friends. Even the people who haven't gone to war, there's... There's this white belt who came up to me the other day and he was really struggling like emotionally. And I kind of took him in the back and we were talking about it. And he goes, you know, I have a really high pressure job because I'm giving him that speech. I'm like, hey, man, it's like you have to change your mindset because if you're just hating yourself, you're losing all of the quote unquote therapeutic things you can be getting out of jiu-jitsu. And he goes, well, I have a real high pressure job where I can't make mistakes. And I was like, oh, buddy, you don't. Do you know what I do for a living? Like thinking I was being like, wait till you hear about stand-up comedy. And I go, so what do you do? And he just goes, I'm a surgeon. And I was like, well, fucking never mind. Yeah. Like I was so high and mighty on myself. Just like, we've been called the philosophers of modern day by ourselves. And he's a surgeon. And so all these people, they have like these high pressure things. But whenever I give this speech, I'm shocked at how much people need to hear it because you know, you hear the cliche that jiu-jitsu is my therapy. But these are people who also like aren't really doing any kind of therapy. And so when you think about how you treat therapy, if you showed up to therapy being like, I have to fucking win, right? I have to make sure she doesn't like find out about my dad issues or I have to, you know, whatever it is, you're not doing therapy. So when you go to jiu-jitsu and you say jiu-jitsu is my therapy, and that just means I'm avoiding my wife, my job, my kids, and I pray to God there's someone there that's worse than me that I can just take my anger out on. That's not therapy. Yeah. Like, get a punching bag. Where it becomes therapy is what you said. Where it becomes therapy is when you can apply, I'm in a stressful situation. I'm getting my ass kicked. Can I maintain breath? Can I stay calm? Can I not make the situation worse? And then you transfer that. It's like meditation. You don't meditate to have no thoughts. That's impossible. You meditate to every time you have those thoughts, how can I come back to the breath? And jiu-jitsu is just a much more intense version of that. So if you're...
Is that a burp? That was impressive.
It was adorable.
Like, that was really audible. I'm... Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I can only hear some.
No, I wanted, and I didn't mean that with any irony. Like, it was genuinely.
There was a moment where Giorgio was like, is this passive aggressive? And he's like, no, he was happy. And so that, I wish people had that realization sooner. And it's harder for men, I think, especially men who start jiu-jitsu later in life. Because you're showing up, you're essentially wearing what looks like your child's karate gi. Mm-hmm. You have a white belt on. You're paying however much a month. And then you're just getting stomped
on. And you suck.
And you suck, yeah. Dude. And every guy alive, every guy listening, thinks they can fight. Yeah. There is something here where, whether it's the movies we grew up on, where we just go, well, if I was in that bank robbery, and we just have these like insane fantasies until you show up and yeah. you're getting strangled by someone who looks like me or a girl or someone smaller than you. And then suddenly your ego gets really tested because you're like, can I even defend my family? Am I even a man? Blah, blah, blah. And then you have to fucking go back. And so it's so easy to base what your mental health is based on whether you quote unquote win or lose. But once you switch over to that gear that you were at, where it's like, it's all the cliches, but it's like you're competing with yourself. You should be proud of yourself for showing up. Most people are too afraid to do that. Most people quit either after the first day or when they get their blue belt. And once you can find the thing that you're proud of and you think about that when you're driving home on top of the things you need to fix, that's now jujitsu can be your therapy.
Same with open mics, right? Like, I mean, how many tens of millions of people have tried comedy? How many couple hundred thousand people stuck with it?
Dude, the best advice I ever got, you know, Henry Rollins?
Of course, yeah.
So I met Henry Rollins when I was starting comedy. And I knew he was a big fan of Bill Hicks, and I was a big fan of Bill Hicks. So we had this conversation about comedy in New York at the bookstore I was working at. I was like 21. And he said, I asked him for advice. I go, hey, if there's any piece of advice. And I love this because it was just so, there was nothing romantic about it, where he just goes, you find the thing you love, and as long as you don't quit, he's like, you may not be super famous, but as long as you don't quit, you'll make a living.
Yeah.
And it's really true, because you ask for advice and you want someone just to say, this is how you get a booking agent, or this is what the Instagram's algorithm wants, or this is whatever. And when I look back at all the times that I just didn't quit when I shouldn't have quit, it's like, things are still tough. Things are always going to be tough, but like, I am still here, and yeah. I am still doing, and it's strictly from just fucking plow through, man.
Well, and I Henry's a big, I don't want to like first name basis name drop him, but I met him numerous, especially being in like the LA kind of punk rock kind of meathead world.
Yeah.
Like we constantly were bumping into each other. And I really looked up to him for one reason in particular, because I read some of Henry's autobiographical stuff, and like the hell he took by virtue of being muscular.
Mm.
You got to understand, in the mid 80s hardcore scene where that's all your friends are vegan, funny. Who like, I fucking hate jocks. Fucking, they're the worst. They're worse than,
right.
They're worse than like the Iron Curtain,
right.
Fucking meathead jocks.
And he literally looks like a cop.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like shaved head or like high and tight with jacked, and he's out there and like his best friends are like Ian MacKay. Like, like the most like ardent vegan, like it's all about like
push-ups are for capitalists.
Yeah. And but he found such tremendous personal growth internally from building his physique.
Wow.
And that was like when I was in high school and I started lifting weights, I literally did it in secret because
there's
nothing less cool than being buff in 1996. My sister in the mid 80s, we're 11 years apart. Like when my sister was in high school, the same high school, square jawed high school quarterback, prom king, was like, you watch those 80s movies. Like that's how it was.
Right.
You were the cool guy if you were like the jock cool. After like grunge hit, it was so not cool.
It was all like Morrissey. Like,
yeah. And I found so much personal growth from doing it, and it was something that I stuck with, even though I could recognize very clearly this was not cool.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, that's why I like it so much. And maybe it was like my personal kind of punk rock thing, you know.
Dude, that's so fascinating. I mean, I think that, you know, it's following the thing, like no matter what group you're in, it could go from punk rock to Christianity. You know, these far extremes, there is always these sort of gatekeepers, mm-hmm. whether they're like actual gatekeepers or just what you have in your head, you know, like, so even when I became Christian, I was like, well, I guess laughter is no longer permitted, you know? And like, I stopped doing stand up. Cause I didn't know how to do that. And that's a fucking myth.
Yeah.
You know, the idea and you don't, I don't think you know, and you know, you or Rollins, I don't think you know how many people you even help by saying, hey, you're allowed to be a jock and progressive, or you're allowed to be conservative and have a gay friend, or you're allowed to be liberal and have a gun, or you're allowed to be punk and lift weights, or you're allowed to do jujitsu and do, you know, whatever it is, and be artsy. Like, that's my thing. Like, cause I can't say jujitsu and comedy, but like, I'm super artsy. And you can be a Christian, and I stopped meditating, and it's just like, who the fuck is saying that I can't meditate? Cause like, I think Jesus is cool. Like, that's insane. But I think that we're so desperate for tribe and we're so desperate to fit in, and then Instagram and these algorithms make it even worse. Like, the amount of times I've gone, am I a jiu-jitsu guy or comedian?
Yeah.
And then you end up being kind of neither. And it's like, well, why can't you be both? And because I go through what you went through in high school, because when I'm solely focused on jujitsu, I'm in good shape, I'm healthy, I'm waking up at 5 a.m., whatever. And then I go do comedy and I go, I guess I gotta be like a delinquent again.
Right.
And I drink, or I'm just like kind of meaner backstage, not to people, but you know, we're all talking shit.
There's an angry cynical.
And so suddenly I'm like, cynicism. I'm being cynical, or I'm gossipy or whatever. And I go, well, fuck, well, I don't like, and then I stop training, and I'm sleeping later. And I go, I don't like that. And really, the answer is probably always been, and what I'm going to attempt to do now is just like, well, why can't you get the best of both?
Well, and also listen to yourself. I think you hit the nail on the head. And I see it not only, it's most clear, I think, for everyone with political stuff.
Yeah.
Where people genuinely, it used to be you were registered Republican, but you're like, I don't give a fuck if guys marry guys. I don't, you know, right. I registered because, you know, I really kind of like low taxes. So I'm a registered Republican. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Berkeley, so I'm a registered Democrat, but this war, it kind of makes sense. You know, like, there was a way that people kind of, but I think when you have millions and millions and millions of people constantly hitting that algorithm, not only literally, but in your brain, you're constantly seeing like, oh God, I have to align myself. I like that comic, or I like that personality. I like that author. I have to align myself with this crew. And it's very weird, because the more and more I think about it, the more and more I've kind of tried to pin down on a grand scale and on simple shit, whether it's like, hey, I was born and raised in LA and now I live in Texas. Like, I can't wear cowboy boots because I'm not really a cowboy. But I was like, what the fuck? Like, I can have my Converse Chuck Taylors right next to my cowboy boots. It's fine. It's not fine. You know what I'm saying?
It's
I wonder if people, I don't want to say like I'm so advanced, I've put my finger on this. But I also wonder like how much people are on both sides of the aisle. They haven't even checked to think about if they really believe in stuff. They're just like signing up.
I mean, that was me.
Yeah.
You know, I, the reason that I am in the middle now isn't, you know, it's so toxic on social media, where it's like, if someone changes their mind, they call it like, it's a grift.
Yeah.
It has to be a grift. And that does happen. You do get the person who gets who gets canceled, like the liberal who gets canceled, and the next day he's like, what? I've always liked Tucker Carlson. Yeah. Like, I've always been a Carlson head. And he's like all over Fox. And it's like, okay.
The reality is I'm MAGA.
Right.
Tried and true.
Yeah. I always have been, always will be. And then he gets canceled by the right. And he's like, you know, I'm a Bernie guy.
Yeah.
And, but for me, I'm so lucky that didn't happen, because it was offered.
Yeah.
You know, there was a point where I was super left, and I had an affair in my 20s, and then I was no longer welcomed, and I lost everything in a day. And this is like 15 years ago or 10 years ago. The only thing that got offered to me was, now, like, be the opposite of what you were.
Right.
Right? Like, be the anti-feminist guy, be the dude who, you know, whatever. And I couldn't do it, and I was broke for a very, 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 very long time. And then what happened was I moved to Texas and I just became friends with conservatives. Dude, I thought I would hate Tim Kennedy.
Yeah.
If all you know is Tim's Instagram and you're a little liberal from Brooklyn,
sure.
You're just like, oh, I guess this is my enemy. And then you meet him and he's just the sweetest guy. And you start meeting these other conservatives and you see the way that they treat their families. And you don't even talk about politics. You see the way they treat their families and their friends and their kids. And you just go, well, if they're good people, and I assumed and spent years saying that anyone who votes that way is a bad person, then that means I'm wrong and at the very least need to like investigate. And then you start asking questions. You know, the reason I learned how to use a gun is because I asked one of the Navy SEALs who worked for Tim. I go, hey, can you like, I always thought all these pro-gun guys were assholes and just were like happy when school shootings happened and just don't care. Can I just like ask you some questions?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah. And then I asked him some questions and it was great. And then he goes, do you want to go shooting? And in my head, I go, well, I don't want to like have a gun, but you know, I step in to defend people because of my martial arts. If I see something, so maybe if there's a gun, I want to know how to clear it and whatever. And which was like my gateway drug. And then he taught me how to shoot a gun. And I go, you know what? I think I would actually be able to protect people far more if I have this. And so that is how my political stance changed. It wasn't from being shamed or yelled at on Twitter. It wasn't from having to switch sides because I'm like, well, liberals don't like me. Like, I'm still liberal on a ton of stuff. Yeah. I'm still probably the most liberal person at that gym. And I'm more conservative than most people in Austin. And I'm happier than I've ever been because I'm not measuring up my values to what Twitter thinks. I'm going, let me surround myself with good, loving people who I admire. And politics kind of comes last.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just trying to be around people of good character. And right now, most of those people in my life happen to be like lean conservative.
And that's also great. You can't ever know, and Giorgio and I have talked about this a million times, you can't ever really know the trillions of experiences each person's had that made them feel and act the way they act, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're in the Klan.
Sure.
Okay, like, I just see this guy, John, he's in the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
I go, okay, well, that's I don't support that in any way. But then, yeah. You know, there's that guy, I should do my homework as a broadcaster, and I finally, but I know his name's Daryl.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But his whole purpose is, he's a black guy.
I did a show with him.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
it is Daryl, but I don't know his last name.
Everyone always asks, well, what is the secret? There is a secret. I just talk to him. I just hang out with him.
Yep.
And every single time you get to that point in the conversation where they're like, I don't know why. My dad was horribly racist and he beat me. And I, you know, I grew up in an all black neighborhood. I was beat up every day of my life. And I just kind of came to this conclusion. I fucking hate. But then you kind of unfold these layers,
yeah.
You know, and there's always, it's really, I think, counterproductive to rush to these conclusions about people you don't know. No. Now, granted, there's not many, but there's a handful of people in my life that I don't like them very much because I know them.
Yeah.
And I know, like, he's a fucking scumbag. Yeah. That guy's a scumbag.
Well, like, and especially where we come from, it's like meeting people who, you know, portray one thing,
mm-hmm.
and then you find out that they're a scumbag, and that hurts even more.
Yeah.
Because you go, so many people think you're so, and you can't concern yourself or get caught up in it, but there are those moments where you just go, there's someone being rewarded and I know they're a bad person, and you know, you can just, and those are those moments where you go, man, maybe it would have been easier if I was less interesting, if I just like played the game more. And I'm sure you've had those moments where
for sure.
Maybe I should have played the game. And then you have to check yourself and go, no. Like, I'm happy with, ever since I started just being like, I want to be happy with the man I'm becoming. It is so much harder. And I think I'm way happier because it's not just based on career stuff or who likes me or fitting into this group or anything like that.
Well, and learning, this is the most trite hippie bullshit ever, but I mean it. It's something that rings very true. It's like learning to get to the point where you love yourself.
Yeah.
It kind of carries over. greatly. I'm like, so if you're really confident in the fact that, like, I think I'm a good person, I've become a good man, and I do these things that I can go to sleep at night and think I'm good.
Yeah.
It kind of permeates how you get treated.
Well, and how wild is it that we live in a culture where you had to preface that?
Yeah.
Where you had to be like, oh, I'm not trying to be gay or anything, but like, you should love yourself. It's like, yes, we should all be thinking that every day.
Yeah.
Where it's like, how do we wake up and love? And I mean, dude, you meet people at the highest, you know, level of fame or level of whatever. And I mean, even in the Christian world, and you just go, oh, like, you're miserable.
Yeah.
You're just trying to maintain this, whether it's finances, whether it's, you know, whatever. And you go, that's what I thought I wanted. And you have to remind yourself that when you maybe, you know, see the dude who has more followers or see the dude who has a bigger podcast. And I've really started asking myself, like, you know, I'll see someone who's in a movie and I'm like, that guy was really mean to me when I was a comic.
Yeah.
And then I just go, was he happy anytime I saw him? And you go, nope. And then you go, all right, I guess I pray for that dude. I hope he's happy now.
It's a good point. And that's where you start getting into what I look at as a grift, where, especially in the spiritual world, whether it be traditional kind of Christian, like Judeo-Christian stuff, whether it be like the Eastern, you know, you see a lot of these yogis that talk about like getting it. And a lot of the people online are like these self-help gurus.
Yeah.
Some of them are, that's their way to make money. Oh, some of them are very sincere and it's very authentic. And you go, well, I think beautiful. You do what you do. And I hope you make $1 trillion. But then there's some people that you realize like your whole world's built around being spiritual. And you see behind the curtain, you're like, you're a fucking rancid person.
Bro, I saw, I don't know if he's a rancid person, but I saw, I don't know if I can even like say that. I mean, it's a thing I saw, the most famous Eastern spiritual, and just to be clear, I still like love Buddhism. I mean, I trust Ram Dass more than I trust most Christians. Like, I'm still in that world. I'm currently microdosing. Like, we're good in that community.
Right.
But I saw the dude who is like the pinnacle, like the top Eastern on Oprah, like the guy. And this is when I worked at that bookstore.
Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro. This is when I was working at the bookstore again. I was 21. And he had a new book out and he walked in and I was like, oh my God, it's the guy. And he walked in, looked at the front table, saw his book was not on the front table, screamed at one of the employees, asked to speak to a manager, screamed at her that his book wasn't on the front table, then went to walk out of the bookstore, didn't see it was a glass door, and walked face first into the door, looked around and left.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the guy.
It's disappointing.
That's the guy who's like, manifest your happiness. All you need to do is like get in contact with the universe, blah, blah, blah. And you get more disappointed. You know, I would rather give me the scumbag LA guy who's just like, you know, you almost respect like an Andrew Tate more than some of these spiritual leaders because you're like, he's not pretending.
I've always said the same thing. Like, I've never been particular. It's not really important whether or not I like her work or not, but I've always respected the Chelsea Handlers of the world, the Dave Lettermans of the world, because I would never want to be the person who's hard to approach or is kind of prickly, but they never sold you a false bag of goods.
Right.
David Letterman's like, I hate this fucking job. I hate all you fucking fuck this.
That's right.
Chelsea Handler's like, I'm a cunt. I hate all the girls I went to high school with, but I'm fueled by anger.
Yep.
And I'm going to be rich and successful because I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to get married. I don't want to have kids. Fuck you.
Sure.
And I'm like, hey, good. Good for that's. Yeah. I find that very, very appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I think, you know, I haven't rehashed like my stuff in a long time, but even with what happened to me, nobody was like, oh my God, this guy had an affair and we are such a moral country that whatever. No one investigated, you know, what my mental health was like at the time. It was that I was seen as this very preachy, self-righteous liberal. That's what got me in trouble.
Yeah.
It was that. The affair thing was just like, ha ha. You know, look, there's another hypocrite. It's the same way when, you know, a homophobic pastor gets caught with like a dude where you just kind of go, haha. And when I look back at when I was like that, when I was like the haha, look at this guy before it happened to me, It was just to cover up for my miserable life and my failing, because so many of us were going through it and we're screwing up and we don't really know where to turn. And you can either turn to the hard path of doing hard things, of self-actualization, of working on yourself, of confessing your sins or your problems and getting a grip on them, becoming a better man. Or you can go on Twitter and you can see who got canceled that day and you can go, ah, look at that guy. Until it happens to you.
It's weird because the reality is it's like, it's just because you're told from a very young age, like it's very important to be conscientious and concerned with everyone else and to be selfless. Whether you're raised religious or not, I think that's kind of a through line. For most people, you hope that is a kind of a moral thing, which is of course true. You want to be concern for people, but it's really, really hard work to self-examine. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets lost in the translation where people get so, where they're like, how am I viewed? How does this people see? But you don't, like, no one takes the time to be like, I fucked this up. And I need to, I really need to do some work on myself. I need to do this. And especially for dudes, because you're like, if I get rich and successful, everything's good.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. You just kind of skip over really looking inside, like where are you on the scale of humanity?
Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, Rick Rubin talks about that, about, you know, why do all these really successful musicians either become addicted to drugs or alcohol or kill themselves? And it's because they keep telling themselves, once I get this, I'll be fine. And then suddenly they get it and they're not fine. Yeah. And they go, I guess it's me, or where do I strive next? And I'm not saying that I recommend anybody completely rock bottoming or getting publicly shamed, but also that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
And even that, though, to give myself some credit, because I think sometimes I say that just so I can distance myself from anything good I did. I've also seen that happen to people and they just double down on being bitter and blaming others. Yeah. And, you know, if I did go down that route of just, well, fuck women, or, you know, whatever that was. But there's a, you know, you rock bottom and you have a real kind of like choose your own adventure of, I either double down on this bad behavior and keep blaming everybody else, or you go, oh, this is fundamentally a me issue. And while, sure, some these people may have screwed me over, or, you know, this group of people, no one will ever know, like, the full story, or, you know, I could kind of claw at that. The bottom line is, like, we can only control ourselves. And so you can spend your time, again, this is more cliche stuff, but it's all true. You can spend your time looking for why it's other people's fault, or these people let me down, or these people screwed me over. And, or you can just go, right, but there's always a part of it, probably a bigger part than you think, that is my fault. And instead of seeing that as, therefore, I'm a piece of shit, you can see that as really empowering.
Right.
Like, that's why I don't understand why people don't want to self-examine, because isn't it actually, like, much more comforting to think, oh, this is in my control? Like, if I just wasn't selfish in that relationship, or if I just listened to my wife a little more, or if I just, you know, whatever, start working out or eat healthy, or I'm actually going to be happier. If you're only blaming other people, well, then I guess your life just sucks.
That's my, again, it's a, you know, I'd probably be beating this dead horse, for the people who, for the 10 to 20 people who consistently listen to this podcast.
No, that's good. I have to fast forward to every Jocko 3-hour podcast of him, like, reading military history just to literally hear him say, wake up early. And I'm like, that's my stuff.
That's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
But that's my biggest concern with a lot of kind of progressive ideals right now, is that I do care about women. I do care about Black people. I do care about the LGBTQ community.
And that's why if you're
coming
listeners.
Out, exactly. But if you're coming out the gate with everything is everybody else's fault, it puts you in a mindset where it's like, well, where do you go from here? I am sure life for a Black man Same exact situation as you and me, but happens to have black skin. It's tougher. Yes.
Yeah.
But if you're constantly from day one thinking anything that happens, if I get arrested today, if I don't get this job, it's like, it's clearly white supremacy. Well, yeah, that's a dangerous spot to be in.
Well, not just thinking, yeah. Being told that,
yeah.
Mainly by wealthy white
who
people.
Who want to make money off you.
Exactly. On social media. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so it's, you know, I mean, that was one of the, it was so crazy when I started listening to kind of more conservative people and assuming people like Jocko would just be like hateful or, you know, or Tim. And you listen to them and you go, geez, is this what I was missing? Like if before I had that affair, I had people in my life, and this is my fault to be clear. Had people in my life talking about the things that I thought were these evil Republican
right.
ideas, like personal responsibility, like, you know, a good masculinity instead of just all masculinity is bad. All of these concepts. I mean, these are the concepts that have turned me into who I am now. And the fact that they're known, that it's even politicized, that I grew up thinking, you know, Republicans had a stakehold on family, God, personal responsibility. I mean, these are all such good things. And then what did liberals have? Like weed, being sad. Of course I ended up where I ended up. Like, I didn't really have any masculine role models in a good way. And so then once I started listening to people like that and becoming friends with people like that and training with people like that, I go, oh, I can still love gay people and want to fight against racial inequality and all that stuff. And I can do it from such a more powerful place because I'm taking responsibility and I'm trying to become stronger and I'm trying to hold myself accountable, you know, all that stuff. It's really fucking empowering. I think the problem is, you know, especially when we were growing up, there were so many conservatives. It wasn't like a Martin Luther King Jr. take personal responsibility. It was like a wealthy white dude who was born into, you know, the Bush dynasty, who was telling the single black mom of five to pull herself up by her bootstraps.
This is America.
Yeah, where it's like,
all you gotta do is work hard.
You guys stole all the boots. Yeah. So it's like very hard to do that. And so you see that hypocrisy and then you just go, well, fuck, I don't want to be part of that at all.
Yeah.
And so then what I do is you rebel and you go totally on the other side where you're just a victim and you're being rewarded for being sad and all this stuff. And yeah, man, it's tough. I think you need this combination of like David Goggins and Ram Dass or, you know, I made a clip once, one of my podcast clips, like Jocko and Jesus. Give me like the compassion and the grace of Jesus. And then also I need someone to be like, fucking go work out today, dude.
Yeah.
Like you need both of those things.
I had a really weird experience right in that ball. I had this guy, Judd Leinhardt on the show. He's a strength and conditioning coach. And he said on the podcast, he's like, I pass judgment on people who are out of shape because I think that they maybe don't follow through with stuff and they don't. And I said, I think you're right. There's some truth to that. But also let's look at the modern day lifestyle of most people. Most people are broke and we've never had to work harder for less money. And it's stressful with, you know, the phones and you got to take care of a family. And like, you can't expect people to then tack onto that. Like, I'm going to be really disciplined in my workout and eating. You're just so stressed and tired. And he goes, that's actually a really good point. That was unfair of me to say. And I was like so impressed by his.
That's so great.
Right. I post that clip and he gets flamed.
No.
Like, oh, you fence riding fucking flip flopper. And I was like, wait, this is, you can't. Like, I don't know. I think it's very weird that you look at humans as like this monolithic thing.
Well, and you don't want the idea that, you know, this is the whole like grifter thing that you can't grow up and change your mind.
Yeah.
Is like, to me, that is not something to brag about. like, I've stayed the same for 40 years. Like, that is so unhealthy. That means you have been in the same echo chamber. You've been regurgitating the same talking points that you either got from your MSNBC person or your Fox News person. You don't hang out with anyone who challenges you. Like, that's fucking gross. Like, the idea of that guest you had on the spot, on a podcast, being like, wow, that's a really cool... And then, like, the commenters... just being like, I like that guy better when he was mean to fat people. Yeah. It's like, what's your deal?
Yeah.
And you know, to that point, I think it's really important to talk about because, yeah, like my mom would eat Burger King all the time, not because she's an idiot, not because she's a glutton, but because, you know, none of us were educated properly about nutrition. And in her head, when she was growing up and we had no money, it's like, well, I could go, you know, buy this. I mean, now, right? Like a grass-fed steak, or it seems like, well, for $3, I get this double cheeseburger. And, you know, you just think of quantity. Look how much more food I'm getting.
I can get 16,000 calories for $6, or I can get 6,000 calories for $60.
Yeah,
it's like,
man.
What are you going to choose?
Well, and like, also, realistically. Food is, I haven't really talked about this publicly, but like food is really hard. If I were a girl, I would say I have an eating disorder. But because I'm a guy, I go, I like food.
Yeah.
And it is addicting.
Well, if you're not an alcoholic or a drug addict, people are very reluctant. And by the way, as an alcoholic and a drug addict, it's way sex addicts and food people who have eating disorders. I always felt a different level of sympathy for them because I go, dude, it's way harder for you.
Yeah.
I can just say I never am going to drink alcohol and do drugs again.
Yeah.
And I'll be fine. In fact, I'll probably be better off.
Yeah.
You can't say I'm not going to eat.
No.
And you can't say I'm not going
to
fuck.
Yeah. If you're trying to quit smoking, you don't need to have 3 cigarettes a day.
No.
Still.
Yeah. You have to figure out a way to still eat.
Dude.
And that's really tough.
Totally. And, it, you know, especially for guys, I think because it's kind of like seems like a sorority girl thing. It's sure. Like they don't want to talk about it. But I mean, you know, me and Jordan, like all three of us, we've heard, I'm sure we've been in like fight locker rooms that sound like a college female with like the pinching of the fat and the body dysmorphia. And, you know, we binge eat and maybe we don't throw up, but like we will like fast the next day, which is essentially like anorexia, or we'll, you know, go to the gym and just work out so hard and punish ourselves. And it is like, you're right. Like, I mean, alcohol is kind of similar because there is still commercials, but if I'm trying to eat healthy, especially I've been injured for a year, so I haven't been able to train. And it has been so hard because you're depressed and you're broke and maybe you eat healthy all day and then you go to watch the fights and every commercial is just pizza,
chicken wings,
alcohol, chicken wings. Absolutely. And then you go, well, I'll just give myself this one cheat meal and, you know, you do that. And, dude, I used to, this I've never talked about, I used to smoke weed. I don't like it. I don't like being high, but I used to smoke weed to give myself an excuse to eat shitty.
Yeah.
Because if you add I was high and did blank to most stories, it's far funnier than it is sad.
Yeah.
If I'm a grown sober man and I'm just like, hey, you guys want to go get some cake after this? It's like, what the fuck's wrong with Jamie?
It's 11 a.m.
Yeah. But if you're high and you're like, want to go to the Cheesecake Factory? It's hilarious. It's a funny story. And so I would rather go to jail. I would rather do the illegal like middleman then I would admit that it's like, hey, I'm thinking about food all the time. And I've like hung up on getting delivery in like a shaky panic because of all the shame. And so circling back to your guest, it's like for anyone listening who is, you know, struggling with their weight or struggling with some kind of addiction, I don't think the shame might be a rock bottom moment. Like I remember the last time I rolled with Tim Kennedy, I like right before I got the stem cell stuff.
How many times have I heard this story? Myself included, where it's like when I was rolling with Tim and I started to hate my life. Like everything starts. I've never heard. It's like those like autobiographies you have from rock stars. And I always talk about like you've never read the book where they're like, and then they started doing drugs and things really took off. It's always I've never heard someone start. I was rolling with Tim and my life became good. It's always like, oh, the fucking horror, like living in Abu Ghraib, like just the horror of him.
You're helpless. And anytime you do think you do something good, something so much worse is about to happen. Because I remember my wife was watching this role for the first time, and I thought I, like, pushed out of this single leg, yeah. and I made eye contact with my wife, and I was just like, I'm the fucking strongest man on the planet. And he literally, not even a jiu-jitsu move, he just grabbed my gi and just yanked me to the ground like I was a child. Yeah. And I remember, you know, because I hadn't trained, so... I hadn't trained in a while. Then I got my black belt, and Tim's like, hey, I don't care if you're injured. You're doing your black belt rounds. Yeah. So he put me with all the black belts, and I went with Tim, and I, like, I feel like all of my messages to him start with, like, hey, man, I'm getting in shape. Sorry about that. And I was like, hey, thanks for the role, blah, blah, blah. I'll get my cardio back, you know, soon. And he just goes, just eat less and exercise. And I was like, thanks, pal.
Yeah.
But also – that worked. And I started eating. That was my rock bottom. I started eating healthy. But I will, the advice I have is you can't, and I don't know if, tell me what you think. Cause yeah. I don't want to like step on some fucking like AA shit. But I think that if it's just shame and guilt, if it's just that guy that's like, oh, if you're fat, you know, you're a piece of shit. Whenever I shame myself, I want to continue to do the bad thing. So if I'm just like, I can't have pizza on fight night because I'm a fat piece of shit, that makes me want to have it. But if I go, I don't want to have pizza tonight because I'm going to go train tomorrow, now it gives me something sort of to look forward to. So I feel like people who are struggling, it's like you need that like come to Jesus moment. You need to be honest with yourself where you're like, I'm fucking up
yeah.
and I need to take personal responsibility. But then once you make that decision, again, it's the drive home from jiu-jitsu. You have to be hyped. It has to be like, I'm not quitting smoking. I saw a comic I haven't seen in a long time, and he got jacked. And I just go, did you quit smoking? And he goes, yep, how'd you know? And I'm like, you're jacked.
Yeah.
Because he decided, instead of going, oh, I can't smoke. I can't hang out at the patio on the when I perform at the creek. I have to like, he just goes, oh, I'm just going to start working out.
Yeah.
And then he starts working out, and you can feel like, oh, my lungs feel clearer when I do cardio. And so you're striving towards something positive instead of just being like, oh, I can't do the fun thing.
I couldn't agree more. And if you really reverse engineer it, Tim didn't say to you, you're a low cardio sack of shit who's fat.
Right.
He said, hey, man.
He was thinking it.
He's like, you need to eat less and you need to train more. And that's the bottom line.
Right.
And that's a big difference between, I hammer it home all the time. And that I went on a diatribe after that situation I had with my former guest where people started flaming him, where I said, you got to understand something. This is not something I think. This is something I know. Drug addicts, overweight people, alcoholics, gamblers, they're already ashamed. That's not open for debate.
Yeah.
I was never like, I'm so pumped I'm having Jack Daniels in the shower in the morning before I go to work.
Right.
Like, I was like, I'm super ashamed of it. I would be defensive. I would lie. I would equivocate. But the bottom line is I'm very ashamed. Yeah. Someone who walks into a room and they know, they don't think, they know people turn and look and they're like, wow, that's a fat person. They're not pumped. Yeah, they're ashamed.
On Friday, I went to Sonic twice. It was one of the hardest days I've ever had. I went to Sonic twice. And anyone who was going to shame me, it's like, if you don't, whatever you have to say is not nearly as bad
right.
as what I am saying, as I am driving myself back for more mozzarella sticks. Trust me, I have the self-hate on lock. I don't need to hear more of it.
So my always, and Lord knows I don't have it figured out, but what I've seen either with my personal life and then with people that are around me that have found success in kind of changing these really difficult habits is that you can't go, hey, fatty, you're a fatty,
right.
fix it. No one has ever told me, you're a fucking disgusting drunk and you disgust me. And then I was like, you're right.
Man.
I'm going to put the, but there's definitely been people I've seen who was like, listen, there's light at the end of this tunnel.
That's it.
But right, you're ruining your life.
That's it.
I don't want to be a part of this. I want to be part of the solution. I'll do anything I can. But what is happening right now is not safe and it's not healthy for you.
And you're better than that.
And you're better than
that. When I teach the
kids. And you can do it.
Yes.
That's a lot of, another thing is like, I not so much with people I meet in recovery. And maybe that's just them burying the lead. I felt that way. When I was 19, the idea of me going the rest of my life without drinking or using drugs is just fucking preposterous. But I meet so many people either that reach out for help with training and nutrition or just people in life where they genuinely say to me, and they're being serious. I could tell by the way how earnest they are. They're like, yeah, but I can't do that.
Right.
It's not, that's not for me.
Yeah.
People have told me I'm fat since I was always the big girl. I was always, you know, but I, that's who I am. I'm big boy. And I was like, no. Like you can, I'm fucking a lazy pile of shit.
Yeah.
And I can be ripped at 45. Like granted, yeah. there's been drugs and there's been,
yeah.
I'm a little bit off, but yeah. I'm not special. I'm not like a genetic gift and I'm not like, and many of the people I know that are they're not. There's nothing unique about them. It's just like you make the decision, you know?
Please train me. no, seriously. But I mean, those stories we tell ourselves too, like, I know I'm very good at jujitsu. But
you are good at jujitsu.
Thank you. But I've also told myself, but I'm never going to look like a fighter. You know what I mean? I remember the week after, before Volkanovski fought Ortega, him and Craig Jones came to 10th Planet. And literally it was me and Gabe, the head instructor of 10th Planet. And it was me, Gabe, Craig Jones, and Volkanovski in a closed off gym. I was brought in to be part of that. I got to train with Volkanovski for an hour straight. And then the next week, my one of my dearest friends, Vrindavan, who's Tulsi Gabbard's sister, who does like executive protection stuff. I was giving her a private lesson. And I... same week made some joke like, well, if I was a real fighter or whatever, just because I'm not a comedy guy, I'm like a pot-bellied comedy guy. And she goes, what are you talking about? If you're a real fighter, you're literally teaching me how to fight in this moment. And it's like, so even though I've been training some form of combat sports since 17, have trained with all the best people in the world, I still, because I look like this, I go, well, I'm not a real fighter.
Do you think, and I'm not trying to get all fucking Dr. Phil on.
No, I need
it. But do you think that there is a place in your mind that makes it that way? Because you're like, I'm a comic and I'm Brooklyn vegan guy.
Right.
And so you're like, I don't, not that you couldn't, but you're like, I'm not even going to.
Well, it's like,
that's not for me. That, again, it's like getting back to that.
You spend so long rebelling against those things out of insecurity.
Right.
Because I was one of those people who wouldn't trust you, probably still didn't trust you when I saw you, like, because I'm like, well, that guy's like the jack. I mean, dude, every time I teach at Tim's and I'm the smallest guy there and I'm teaching, I just go, like a bunch of white belts who, like, obviously I can impart plenty of wisdom on. I just go, well, I'm not a real fighter. I'm not. And then 5 minutes into teaching, I snap out of it. But I do that same thing with comedy where I just go, well, I'm not a real comic because I've, like, you know, fallen off whatever. And then I get on stage and I go, oh, fuck, I'm really good at this or whatever. It's just.
That's a very important point, though. And I'm sorry to interrupt. But that's another reason why most people who don't work out, or they didn't grow up as an athlete, or they don't lift weights, and so they are not intimidated by starting working out by the gym equipment. It's not the barbells. It's not. They're terrified of what everyone else is going to think of them. Ooh. Right? Your level of jiu-jitsu, your level of your skill level at comedy is here.
Yeah.
You're like, if there's, you know, someone killed Bill Burr's there or something, you're like, but I'm not like him.
Right.
That's in your head.
Right.
You know, that's all it is. Right. It's like, I'm not like these ripped CrossFit chicks I see on Instagram. Therefore, I'm not going to expose myself to that.
Right.
It's all about like this perceived kind of.
Yeah. Thing. And then, you know, you get a dopamine rush from that moment. You go, I'm just not going to try. You know, I mean, you, the biggest thing with food isn't how I feel afterwards. Cause I feel horrific.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up, I don't drink just cause I don't like it. I have addiction in my family. But I wake up, and I feel hungover. If I eat shitty food and I have that shame memory or whatever, it's the planning of it. It's, you know, me and my wife are struggling right now. Not in our relationship, but like we're going through a bunch of hard stuff right now.
Life is tough.
Yeah. Life is tough. And so, And you forget the days we feel the best are like we go to the gym together, we do all this stuff, and then Friday comes around or fight night's happening, and we go, oh, you know what's going to make all this go away? And there's this like kid excitement about we're going to like order pizza or we're going to do this or whatever. And there will be a point, by the way, where like, yeah, you can order pizza if you are being consistently healthy and, you know, have a night. But for me, I know if I order that pizza Friday, I got to save it for Sunday, because if I order it Friday, suddenly it's like, let's just like take the weekend. And now it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then on Monday when I'm back at the gym and I'm like, why haven't I made any progress? I thought I was eating healthy. I had one cheat meal. And then I go back and I go, oh no, it was actually 3 days. Yeah. But the point being, it's that excitement of the planning of doing the bad thing. That's far more. No one has an affair, shoots their load and goes, yeah,
it's awesome.
It's immediate regret of like, what was I doing? What was I thinking?
I hate to say this, and because I think I've said this before, Giorgio, tell me if I, because I sound like the biggest pussy in the world. And I also probably sound really condescending to guys who have a lot of trouble with girls. But after my first marriage, I got single.
We have so much bad stuff in common.
I know. But my first marriage ended, divorce sucks, but I didn't have kids with my first wife. That's great. And it was acrimonious. I mean, it was pretty civil.
Yeah.
And my wife she's like, I got married too young and I was in recovery, and my wife was really, she's beautiful, Orange County, blonde, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, I like nightclubs and she was in the service industry and she's, and I was admittedly like boring. And I was like, the level I go out with you as is makes me mad. I want to go to bed at 8. I want to watch Jeopardy. And so it ended, right?
It's so funny.
Right as it ended. And it was relatively, honestly, very civil. I have nothing but nice things to say about her now. But I then got on TV almost immediately. And then also my radio career went like this. And now I'm on TV and I have dispensable income. And I live by myself in Venice. And I was almost shocked at how different my relationship with women was.
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't cheating on anybody, there was 90% of the time I would have these one night stands with girls. I was very attracted and I would shoot a load and I'd be like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, like I said, I understand how to a young guy right now who's like really struggling with chicks, like the 7 one night stands I would have in a week, that 6 of them felt horrible.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's like there's a thing to that.
Yeah.
It's not like giving into your impulses so consistently. It can't be a healthy.
No. So I got really lucky because the reason I wasn't religious for so long is because a lot of religious people are assholes.
Yes.
And they're hypocrites. Absolutely. And they're preachy and they're self-righteous. And I was like, I don't need a hypocrite. I got enough dad issues as it is. I don't need like a God dad issue on top of it. And the church I started going to in Austin, I'm so lucky. The pastors are so sweet. They're so self-deprecating. They're just like, they're just good dudes. And, you know, when they talk about sleeping around or they talk about, it's not in this like 80s youth pastor, you're going to go to hell.
Right.
It's in this sort of like, well, did that ever bring you happiness? And you go, no. And he's like, look, whether you want to call it God's way or Jocko's way, this whole discipline equals freedom thing, I mean, that really is biblical, right? Like when you look at the fruits of the spirit and it's like kindness, patience, all this stuff, there's also self-control. And it's not, you can't think of it as like punishing yourself. It's just like these things we're told are good. Getting drunk, fucking, you know, fame, money. You see how it just destroys lives and tears people apart, and yet we keep kind of doing it. You know, even like drinking, such a good example, because again, me and my wife, we don't have a drinking problem, we just don't like it, but we're going through it, and I have this voice that goes like, oh, it'd be nice just to like go get a glass. So not even the physical thing, the words saying, I'm hanging out with this chick, saying, let's go get high, saying, let's go get a glass of wine. It just sounds so romantic, and it sounds like it's going to fix the things. And then you just have to fast forward a little bit to that moment of, to the shoot your load moment, where you go, how do I actually feel? Because usually, even when I have a glass of wine, it just makes me sleepy, and I have a bit of a headache.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make me feel great, but we get, right? But we get used to saying this is the thing that's going to fix it. And then what's wild is we drag ourselves to the gym, or I go get smashed by Tim Kennedy, or, you know, me and my wife go to the park and we feel so much better every time, every time. Me and my wife have been fighting and we awkwardly walk into Gracie and we're laughing and training within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We're fine. And then you go, well, that's got to be a fluke. We should probably get pizza and a glass of wine or whatever. And yeah, it's.
I think it's a very, very valid point. And your wife didn't sign up to be a part of this podcast.
Yeah.
Apparently you didn't either. You were confused that we.
I thought we were hanging out, and I
guess. Well,
and then I slowly started piecing it together, and I'm like, maybe he has questions for me and Giorgio, the podcast producer. And then, which again, I think especially both of us coming from LA,
yes,
this is actually a very healing moment for us, where at no point was I like, I'm going to drive 45 minutes because my buddy, my new friend, might need my wisdom. I don't know what you would need advice on. I was very confused about that, but I came. And then I saw the mics and I was like, oh, sick. Maybe I'll get some new Instagram
followers.
But
I know you're also new to the area and you're in kind of the entertainment industry. And I also have a network of people that I want to bring you in, because I found people that I not only like, I can see, you know, being honest, there is upside for me professionally, but they're good people. That's so I also want to kind of help bring
them. I would love that.
But like I said, your wife didn't sign up to be on this. So if this is in any way crosses any lines, go ahead and just, I'll move on. But I found
the sex is great. Is that what you were going to ask?
Yeah. But the it's kind of like the Marley and Me technique. I always, this is what I've adopted, that I've named it. But when I think about why my wife and I have a good relationship, or why I love her so much.
Yeah.
I'm never thinking about when things were easy.
Yeah.
It's always like us getting through like our worst shit. That is on the end, in the end of things. That's when I always have felt closest to her.
That's so good.
Or appreciated her and our relationship the most. And I wonder if, as you've been open about, like right now is a really tough time for you guys, if that's been kind of your experience.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Like 2 days after we got married, just shit hit the fan outside of our marriage. And there was a moment of, I can't believe this is happening 2 days after I got married. I thought this was the stupid God thing I have to do. Why am I being punished? All that victim-y shit from days of old. And then it's quickly became, wow, did I learn very fast that I have a rock solid wife and a rock solid marriage. Because, you know, it could have turned so fast. You know, she could have just been like, oh, this is what I said. Fuck this. And she just quadrupled down. Mm-hmm. And then that made me quadruple down. And, you know, it's easy to find someone to have sex with. It's easy to find someone to get drunk with. It's easy because we're all just kind of like desperately trying to fill the sad hole, you know? I think what me and you have is like, yeah, like when you find someone that you can go to war with, or that you can fight well with, or that when things get bad, they're just like next to you ready to brawl.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I try to impart that to younger guys, because Lord knows I am not pointing fingers. I'm the horniest, grossest guy ever. Yeah. And as a single man, I was like, I was so, before I got, as a teenager in high school, I would walk over broken glass for any attention from female. I mean, I'm so charged up.
The amount of times, like with AOL, I should have been kidnapped many times. The amount of times I was like clearly being like catfished and just so desperate.
Yeah.
So desperate. And dude, imagine if we grew up with the access to like porn. I mean, we had to fight private school kids for magazines, and it still fucked us up.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. Two things. if in 2008 there was Tinder already, first off, I wouldn't be here.
No.
I would like the guys at the end of Beetlejuice where they dry out and they whiz, you know, when they put this person, and I would have expended so much jizz that I would have dried out into a prune, or drowned myself in my own jizz. Like Zach Morris's locker when he opens the door, that would be my apartment.
Just yep.
And also because I beat off 5 times a day to a TLC record cover, like a CD cover.
Sure.
Where they were wearing like kind of loose fitting, like silky stuff.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I can't deal with it.
Bro, me and my friends would lie face down on the carpet watching blurred out Playboy Channel.
Yeah.
Like scrambled.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, that looks like a tit just hiding our erection. It was probably like a lamp. We would literally, there would be like I have a core memory of being in my friend Brady's treehouse in a snowy New Jersey, like winter's day. And there was one, like, who knows if it was water or snow or cum, just like page of not even like a full spread, but of the 900 number ads.
Yeah.
And just like holding and having to take your gloves off.
Like frozen like jizz stalactites. Yeah.
It was so, I could have fallen out of that treehouse and like it would not have mattered.
And that's, I think that's an exclusively male thing. Yes. Like, I don't think young girls are that. Of course, young girls find guys. Young girls get horny.
They'll hump a pillow.
But what the disproportionate ape-like charge you have for. And if I had, and by the way, you're watching that blurry Playboy channel in 1998 or whatever. No offense. There were a couple, handful of very nice looking women in the adult industry, but in the old days. But most of them, you were like, whoa.
That's actually a great point.
Nowadays with like Lana Rhodes and these girls, like there's fucking flaming hot, and a collection of insanely hot chicks that are like, oh, butt to butt double dong, let's go. Like, I don't even understand how these kids control themselves.
Dude, you know? I mean, I would not be able to sit still at a show. If I just had butt to butt double dong and it lived in my pocket.
Yeah.
I couldn't function in the real world. I would be dead.
I agree.
Yeah. I can't. I actually, what's funny is
By the way, that's our new band. Georgia, you want in? It's a power trio. Yeah.
I had a, I was never really, I wasn't a porn guy recently, but I did have this like porn phase when I became Christian, because I was trying not to have one night stands.
Sure.
And so I thought of like, the way I told it to my pastor is it's like when you start listening to Taylor Swift ironically, and then suddenly you're like, do I fucking love Taylor Swift? I was just like, well, I'm just gonna watch porn so I don't, oh, my ex texted, or this person wants to hook up, or I just did a show and whatever. I'll just go home and watch porn because that'll be the better path than like sleeping with this person.
It is.
It is, but then it becomes, suddenly I'm seeing all the addictive stuff that comes with it.
It's a slippery slope.
And it's a slippery slope.
But I absolutely, and I will say this over and over again. As far as like a regulating tool, like a preemptive strike. Sure. Like if
that's
I,
so good.
I'm so much more responsible with empty balls.
Yeah,
and if that means I have to do two or three trips to the bathroom with my HD hub,
dude. I remember.
So be it.
When I before I had that affair, and I was just so it was a really, it wasn't a healthy relationship, and I would go on the road, and I was just trying so desperately hard not to cheat. I would like go back to the hotel and I would, after saying no to a girl, and I would go back to the hotel and I remember I would watch porn, and it was almost like, just like we were saying, when you have the one night stand, the shame of coming, it was actually the opposite of that with porn. I should do a commercial for Pornhub. It would be the opposite of that, because I felt like I would get like a double orgasm, because not only was I coming, but then as I was coming, I was just like, I just saved my marriage. Yeah. And I would be so excited about that.
I'm going to be good.
Yeah. And so now, maybe I have to adopt it. But it is a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get to the point where it's like, oh, I have a fight with my wife. So now instead of like fixing it, I'm going to go get a dopamine rush.
I think that's
where it gets tricky.
No, I think that's important kind of. There's a discrepancy that you have to look at. I think when you start using porn or just in masturbating in general to regulate your emotions, like as therapy. That's rough.
Well, again, it's that planning. It's when you get that, when I get that like rush of like, oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Take a beat.
Yeah.
Because usually if I take a beat, I'll be like, oh, I just needed a walk.
Yeah.
Or I just needed something.
Yeah. No, there's a way you can exercise that. But if you're being very open, like we're all admitting that there's a certain level of horniness that women just can't
fathom.
Not only understand, but they can't, like, I can't expect my wife to provide me sex as much as I wanted. Sure. It's preposterous.
Yeah. She would die.
She couldn't have a career. She couldn't have a job. And she's a mother. Our daughter's home a lot. Like, I can't, it's just not realistic. Sure. So I also can't torture myself if I made a very serious commitment to be faithful.
Yep.
And so I have to make heads or tails of this situation because sure. I've left, especially in Southern California, you know, in Santa Monica, Venice area, I'd go to the gym sometimes and I'd be like, I can't do this.
Dude.
And I'll walk right out the door and I'll go home and I'll beat off and I'll be like, maybe I'll come back. And I gave up on yoga. I gave up on it because I'd be in Santa Monica. It's like the Playboy Mansion. And these girls are like, downward dog. And I was like, what are we doing?
When I got back from COVID.
Yeah.
I felt like I was in fucking Al Qaeda when I got back from COVID and I went to the Austin Creek and I saw now everyone wears thongs.
Yes.
And again, that was the thing we had to fight kids to find magazines.
Yeah. And now they're right just for you.
Wearing it. Yeah. I was just like, oh, I can't. Can I not be out? Like suddenly you're just like, they should all cover up. And you're like, no, I guess I'm the problem. And then, but like I had to adjust to that.
Yeah.
And I mean, now I'm immediately just like, fucking eyes down, like walk forward. Yeah.
There's a part of that too, though, that you should look at as a positive because I know so many guys, you're around my age, right? I'm 45.
Yeah. 41.
Okay. I know so many guys our age that literally aren't horny anymore because of an unhealthy lifestyle because they don't. I know plenty. I thought that was relegated to like 80-year-olds.
Me too.
And so.
This is great.
I think like there's a part of that where you go, you know what?
Still got it, baby. Yeah.
I always tell people when it comes, especially because people get over that they go and they want to do something healthy. A lot of times they take it too far and with health and fitness and with getting lean and stuff like that. And when I see 20-year-old, 25-year-old women, not on the pill, who are not getting their period anymore.
Yeah.
And then when I see 25-year-old guys who are like, I'm not even really horny. And I go, we've gone too far.
Yeah.
Like there's something going on. But the same thing happens. You're overweight.
Mike and I are still horny enough. We could throw our second marriages out the window at any moment.
Yeah. No, you could see a documentary about me on Forensic Files anytime.
Well, real quick, I would feel, I would feel remiss not to be like an anti-porn guy, but a lot of that actually does. So it comes from unhealthy lifestyles, but a lot of that also comes from porn. So one of the reasons that I cut porn down is the more like research I did, which is it can also drop your sex drive.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I remember when we were younger, it was always like beat off before a date so you can like last longer and blah, blah, blah. But if you're becoming addicted to porn and you're jerking off to porn two or three times, so your nervous system is essentially, because usually when we're watching porn, we're not like lighting candles in a bath. We're like shamefully trying to come as quick as humanly possible. Yeah. So you do that and you're training yourself to come as quick as possible in this kind of like shame, fight or flight state. So that's not going to help you when it comes to performance. I was shocked when I stopped watching porn and suddenly I'm just like, oh, I'm actually lasting way longer, yeah, even though I'm quote unquote more pent up.
It's a good point.
You know what I mean? And so,
also I think that you're almost exclusively looking at like artificially disproportionately stimulating stuff.
Yeah. That's
not, I always say to like really young guys, I'm not going to talk to a 25-year-old guy about porn, but
sure.
When I remember on Loveline when a 16-year-old kid would call up about it, I was like, you got to understand, dude. Watching porn to learn how to have sex is like watching Rocky to learn how to box.
Right.
It's not, it's an aggrandized representation of.
Yeah. Both will lead you to being attracted to Carl Weathers.
R.I.P.
Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. But for real, it's not going to teach you. I mean, I can't, dude, I was awkward enough having sex as a high. Imagine losing your virginity and like coming on a girl's face. Like it's horrific what kids think sex is, but also you have to think about rejection. So it's like you could go and look at porn 3 times a day where you're not getting rejected, let alone whatever the fuck is happening on OnlyFans. I miss that, thank God, where they're quote unquote communicating back with you and it seems like you have these fake relationships. Or you could go talk to a girl at a bar and probably get rejected, or, you know, be called a creep for saying hi to a girl at a grocery store or whatever. And so you also... maybe you're not losing the animalistic sex drive. You know, maybe you can jerk off 4 times a day, but you're certainly not trying to have real sex because you just go, oh, this is way easier.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because I we've spent the last 10 minutes talking about how bad it is guys doing this. I also, it's a whole new world for the young man, the young single guy in that, and this is not all, I'm not saying women in general, but, but there is a whole new explosion of these girls who are like sixes and sevens who think they should only have like a Giga Chad young Brad Pitt who also happens to be a millionaire because Instagram and OnlyFans and all they've been tricked into thinking like their value in the, and they go around treating regular dudes, perfectly good guys who would treat them well, like fucking shit,
like monsters.
And so now there's this 98%, the guys who aren't these millionaire Giga Chad, you know, like the Paul brothers. I'm not talking shit on them, but they're tall, handsome, muscular, famous millionaires. And the guys who aren't them, which is 99% of them, don't stand a chance. And it's not cool. It's
so
not fair,
you know? Two things that might get your guys' hopes up or might be helpful, because you're right. You're totally right. Is I feel like, you know, I have dated girls who are so fucking far out of my league. Even, you know, I mean, God, even after all that shit happened to me, like models.
Yeah.
And then I've met them in real life. Right. And then I had single phases where I would go on like dating sites and like not like nobody, because what you're talking about is especially insidious on dating sites where it pretty much is just physicality. What do they look like? And guys and girls do this. What do they look like? What do they look like? You know, if you're shorter than 6 foot and you're just like, God, guys, I didn't know I was short until I got on a dating site.
Yeah.
And because I'm like, I'm a fighter. I'm like secure at least about that. And then suddenly I'm seeing all this and like, it's only been in the last 3 years that I've been self-conscious about being 5'7". And I'm like, fuck, I guess I'm really short. With that said, every time because people also forget, it's like, sure, I've gotten laid off Tinder, but also the amount of rejection you're getting just by going, swiping 100 girls, you're technically subconsciously getting rejected by 100 girls, right? And so if you just, not even trying to get phone numbers, if you just are at a coffee shop and you make the girl behind you laugh, and you don't have to even try to flirt or be creepy or whatever, it just reminds you that like, oh, the internet isn't real.
Right.
You know? And so I know it seems like you have this like whole like new whatever, like world of options on social media, but if you are experiencing that, I'm telling you that if you develop skills and a personality and you're kind and you're going to places where you can meet people with similar interests. My wife is so much hotter than me. Instead of just going on Twitter and slowly resenting women, I would recommend there is a far better chance of getting those gorgeous girls or cool girls if you get offline and you start developing a life.
Yeah. And being a thought provoking person, for both sexes it goes way farther, because even when I was slaying, I never went to nightclub. I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't going to bars. I would meet girls at the gym. I would meet girls at work.
Yep.
I would meet girls like in life. I would have a friend who's also a really smart, kind of ambitious guy. And he would have a wife who had a lot of female friends. Like if I was just sitting in my apartment going, oh, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, none of that would happen. And no. I think that it had to come at a time in my life when I was, because when I was drinking and using, I was obsessive about, like, I'm going to go to the bar that has the most chicks. And never, I mean, 1% of the time, it'll fucking, you might luck into a girl who's, like, hammered, and she's like, I'll go home with you.
Yeah.
But that's not real. And that's just, but it was amazing when I started to, like, go, you know, I met girls at like movie premieres, like, and I'm not like a Hollywood thing, like an artsy, my friend's a director and he's like, you got to come to my thing. And I was like, oh, look at this chicks who's into artsy film.
Well, and because you are not, I think the problem is too, just like we were talking about the correlation between porn and like low sex drive, is if you're only talking to girls online, suddenly you're like in real life and a cute girl at Starbucks smiles at you and goes, oh, is that your order? And you just go, the eggplant emoji. Like, you don't know how to speak, how to talk. And as opposed to just being able to have a normal, fucking not like sweaty, leering conversation, you know, great advice is if you're struggling with like flirting or communication, it's like, just be, this is just great life advice. Forget having ulterior motives. Just fucking be cool to everyone.
Yes.
You know, when me and my wife got married, we went to our Starbucks, not a mom and pop store, our corporate Starbucks. And they had flowers for us. They knew it because we know everybody in there.
Yeah.
Cause when we go in, we talk to everybody. We're not trying to get anything. I'm not trying to score a job at Starbucks. We're just fucking kind to them. Like, we know people in our neighborhood. We talk to people. Like, practice talking to people just to be, it'll just make your life more fulfilling. You'll just be a nicer human. But also, that is very helpful for when a pretty girl you're interested in suddenly starts talking to you and you're not just walled off or on your phone at every grocery store, Starbucks, stoplight you go to. You're actually used to just fucking interacting with people.
Very good advice. And I learned that the hard way when I saw, first off, what happened was when I got married to my first wife, I went into, now I would be exposed to a lot of hot chicks. And because I was married and I knew I wasn't going to, I started to act so much differently to women. Where I would treat them just like I would treat any person I'd meet, even if it was a guy I had no desire to put my dick in.
Yeah,
sure. And it was amazing because I started to get so much more successful with women.
Yeah.
And I transferred that over. I always think about like when like a couple of my buddies are married to beautiful, smart, like everything perfect 10 women. And you know how I act around them? I act like Mike.
Right.
And even if you're really good with the ladies, there's still a thing when you're single and you meet an attractive woman where you're like starting to like, well, how can I look cooler? And when that goes away, this shit gets so much better.
It's the best.
It should get so much better for you. Yeah. So, I mean, I know that's a hard, you can't, it's not like something you can just switch on, you know, like just be yourself.
No, but that's why it's so important to like do more real shit, have less motives, just be. I mean, God, you want to get really hippie. It's like attract what you want, right? If you're putting shelled off, you know, school shooter energy, like girls aren't going to walk up to you. But if you're just like confident and chilling and just being nice, I would get, you know, before I met my wife, it's like I would have these moments where I would be talking to a girl at a bookstore or a coffee shop while we were waiting and like make her laugh. And just leaving without, I mean, there was always part of me like, should I have asked for her number? Was I actually being afraid? But I would be so happy just being like, see you later. And like, we both just had this like really lovely interaction. It was probably nice for her to not be fucking creeped on. It was nice for me because I was like, oh, I can still like talk to really hot women and make them laugh when like maybe they are used to a bunch of like creepy dudes or whatever.
Probably, unfortunately.
And then when you meet a girl that you're interested in dating, you just have that, like, there's not that desperation, you know? And you can just be yourself. My wife is so fucking weird, and that's my favorite thing about her. If I tried to be what I thought women wanted, or if I tried to be a cool guy, or if I tried to be, like, the good Christian or whatever, no way. But the fact that, like, our first date, we were both kind of doing the weird stuff that we kind of wait on, and we just did that right away— that's why it worked. The thing that you think you need to hide about yourself, unless it's like toxic, but like either the weird personality quirk or the hobby or whatever, you can probably find a girl who wants that or who is that.
Especially now.
Yeah. So like, don't try to be what you think girls want. Cause this is jujitsu advice to bring it full circle is like when I tell, you know, when you see a girl trying to use strength on someone like you and they're just trying to muscle you, you go, hey, you're never going to be stronger than Mike. On top of the fact, like he knows what he's doing. He's on top of you. He has gravity. Why are you trying to use something? You're wasting your energy. What you should be trying to figure out is how do you be smarter than Mike? How do you move faster? How do you use being small to like find gaps that like we don't have, right? When we're trying to be something that we are not, that other people have, not only is it like kind of artificial and weird, but we're losing the things that we have that nobody else has.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe you're not a jock, but you are artsy. If you try to be a jock, they're going to, you're clearly not that. So don't fake that. Instead, like be your fucking artsy self and then attract some fucking dope artsy girl.
And that's getting back, circling back, and we can end on this, like circling back to the very first thing we were talking about. It's like really a really tough advice to take now. Because we're all told like everything has to fit into these identifiable little narrow things. And it's like, actually, the fact that you are really into philosophy and also traveled to Thailand to fight Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Like it's fantastic.
That's the description literally of the original Roadhouse. Cause I watched both of them recently. And in the description of the Patrick Swayze one, he just, it literally says like a PhD in philosophy who kicks ass. And you're like, that's the best.
It's amazing. Yeah. And, or like, you know, I met this guy. I don't know if he worked for Karl Lagerfeld or he was like fashion guy, millionaire.
Yeah.
And I met him at Miami Fashion Week. This is 5-10 years ago, but and I had this idea of all these guys I'm meeting, and they're perfectly dressed and they're at Miami Fashion Week. And all these guys, they were mostly saying the same shit. And it's like, oh, you fabulous honey slay. And I'm talking to this one guy and he's a beautiful man. And I like he's gay in my mind. He's gay. But he wasn't, he's straight. And so we start talking about girls. And then next thing you know, he's like, yeah, I'm leaving Sunday night because I'm going to Minnesota to, you know, hunt whitetail. And I was like, look at you. Yeah. Like, what a fuck. I was like, you go hunting in Minnesota? He's like, yeah, no, I you know, I try to hunt all over the world if I can. I've been lucky that I have and I was like, you're a real life Batman.
Now,
like you're Batman.
Dude. And imagine being a guy in sort of like the, you know, alpha world we are or whatever, who just really likes fashion.
Yeah.
And feels like he can't say that because it's kind of known as like a gay thing. And how fucking cool that would be to be like, you know what I'm saying?
My sister was in the fashion industry and I talked about, she was way older than me, but she's like, listen, go, if you were to get like really double down, go to FIDM and get a degree, like get into it. If you're a buyer, if you're a designer, like you would crush.
Yeah. Same with she's like,
I go to school with zero straight men, mostly women. And the guys that are there are gay guys. And she's like, this is a huge environment for you. I shouldn't take your fight.
It's pretty solid advice to end on, I think.
I really appreciated this conversation, man.
Dude, me too.
It was fantastic.
Thank you so much.
You're always welcome.
Ugh, I needed this like in my life. I don't have a show to plug, but can I plug my Instagram?
I want you to plug it.
If you guys, I make sketches and talk about mental health stuff. And my Instagram is at the Jamie Kilstein.
And also some of the stuff you've been making with your wife, I've found really interesting. Like, and you know, she's a bit daring, because there's not a lot of guys doing that are willing, like the pocket you're in where it's like you're not some Bible thumping, like pure clean people, but you're at the same time you're people who are invested in your morals and ethics. And I find it very interesting.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we're trying to find, I mean, going back to the very beginning of the show, is I do believe, and this is why your show is important, I think while we would probably be more successful quicker if we were like, this is our box, I'm the angry libertarian, whatever it is. I think so many people are secretly in gray areas or are artsy but wish they could work out like you, or, you know, are liberal but like have these conservative ideas. And I think the more that people like us can just like talk about, or like Christian, and it's like, you know, we were fucking before we got married, and like just to be able to talk about it where it's like, hey, you can still love Jesus and be like, that's kind of the whole point. point.
Right.
Is that like you can be flawed instead of these religious people acting like they're not.
Right.
I think it's really important. So yeah, thank you. Real recognizes real. That's what I'm trying to say, buddy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.